Boston, a shift in government, not here, overseas.
To the country, I would like to say first and foremost, I am sorry. I have given this job my all, but you have sent a clear signal that the government of the United Kingdom must change.
Outgoing British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, after his Conservative Party lost badly in yesterday's election. They had been in power for 14 years. The Labour Party's Keir Starmer will become the country's new Prime Minister. President Biden beginning a critical stretch in his effort to keep his re-election campaign going. He will meet with voters in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania today and will sit down for a one-on-one interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos later. Hurricane Beryl, a Category 2 storm as it batters the Mexican resort towns of Cancun and Tulum on the Yucatan Peninsula, Tulum especially in the crosshairs. Labor Department's June employment report out this morning expected to show the market beginning to cool just slightly. This is ABC News. The extreme heat wave battling the West is taking a toll on firefighters who are trying to put out those blazes.
Less wind is helping firefighters make progress on the wildfires burning, but the heat has been dangerous for them. On a 3,000-acre wildfire threatening the town of Oroville, several firefighters have been overcome by the hot weather. Cal Fire Captain Robert Foxworthy.
These hot temperatures that we're experiencing obviously compound things, make things more difficult, especially on the firefighters. And just working in these conditions can be very challenging.
He says all of the injured firefighters are recovering. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Four people were treated for shark bites on Texas's South Padre Island on Thursday. Brian McDaniel was on the beach as swimmers were rescued.
I saw him running towards this guy. I went out there too, and this guy was getting pulled out of the water with a big shark bite.
Another person treated after another shark bite. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The celebration of Independence Day, the adoption of the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776, has a rich history in Wisconsin, too. The holiday commemorates the freedom from British rule for 13 colonies. Is Wisconsin one of those original colonies? The answer coming up. Ringing cowbells and dancing. Residents in Watertown understood the importance of July 4th and held one of the earliest Independence Day celebrations in 1840. Captain Nicholas brought news of Independence Day when he docked at the end of Pearl Street in La Crosse and hosted a celebration in 1846. So now, does the 1776 Declaration of Independence from British rule include Wisconsin? No. Documents show Wisconsin was part of British territory, but so far to the west at that time, there's no impact. Wisconsin instead pushed forward to become a state in 1848. A slice of your 4th of July Wisconsin history. I'm Terry Barr.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden tells Civic Media's Earl Ingram that Donald Trump wants to undo all he's done for black Americans.
I'm sorry to get so worked up, but he is he's done terrible things to the community, and he has about as much interest and concern for black and minority communities as the man in the moon does.
Biden says he's appointed black leaders to high positions in government and fostered a boom in black-owned businesses. Biden campaigns in Madison Friday. The leader of the Universities of Wisconsin's second biggest school is stepping down. UW-Milwaukee Chancellor Mark Mone says he plans to return to his faculty position in UWM's business school next spring. Mone was chancellor for 10 years. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers head to Dodger Stadium. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Brewers are in L.A. to open a three-game holiday weekend series against the Los Angeles Dodgers tonight. Milwaukee's still in first place with a six-game lead over St. Louis in the NL Central. The Dodgers in first place in the West with a six-and-a-half-game lead over the Padres. Tonight will be the debut of 29-year-old right-hander Aaron Civale, picked up in that trade earlier this week with Tampa Bay, against the Dodgers veteran righty Taylor Glasnow, who played for the Rays and the Pirates nights before that. Last night in Denver, the Brewers' bats went cold. They lost 4-3 to the Rockies, who had jumped out to an early 3-0 lead. And although the Rockies are in last place, they managed to split the four-game series with the Brewers. Pat Murphy after the loss.
There was a ton of opportunities tonight, I think, and a couple miscues defensively that cost us. But it's tough to have the intensity every night, but we do keep it close. And I'm just, you catch me 15 minutes after the game, I'm going to be disappointed.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible through early to mid-afternoon today. It'll be mostly cloudy through midday and then gradually clearing here this afternoon. High today, 72. Tonight, clear, 55. Tomorrow, sun in the morning, scattered thunderstorms in the afternoon with a high of 78. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
Earl Ingram.
Tune in to the show Friday for my regular conversation with my good friend Sandy Williams. We'll talk about the 4th of July, my interview with President, and a whole lot more.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Friday, July 5th, 6:06 in the morning. Again, largely a best of Up North News Radio program. But on this Friday, I'd have to say it, it's another beautiful day to have you here up north. From wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, social media, or by podcast. Nice to have you here to wrap up the week, wrap up the work week. Maybe that's my question to start things off with. I got a question for you. Is this a work day for you? Isn't it always awkward? It's not like Thanksgiving, which is always on a Thursday. And so most people take that Friday off or they don't. They just know their routine. But for a floating day like the 4th of July, this is a very awkward time for some folks. And so if you're one of the lonely people at your workplace, well, I hope you get through the day as best you can and get into a good holiday weekend. Closed circuit announcement for Sherry. Happy anniversary. 38 years today. And the pictures from 1986 only make me giggle more with each passing year. A lot to cover today. We've got Bill Hogseth talking about holding deep canvassing conversations at doors around Western Wisconsin. A new conversation with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel talking about all of the cases that wrapped up the Supreme Court's most recent term, a very historic one for all the wrong reasons. We will revisit a conversation with Julie Nunez, a former Alice in Dairyland, about Dairy Month. We'll talk to Mike Strands from the National Farmers Union about what Republican cuts would mean to the farm bill. We've got Joe Zepecki and Melissa Baldoff, Bob Gallagher and Dan Schumacher. On Monday, we've got Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters talking about those August constitutional referendums and why they're a bad idea. But first, let's poke some fun at very young Pat. On the Facebook page here, from Rob, good morning from Tigerton. Dense fog and 57 degrees, 0.3 inch of rain. Thinking of severe weather today, I found a YouTube video. Oh, no. I found a YouTube video of a young Pat Kreitlow doing tornado warning coverage for UW-Eau Claire on September 12th, 1982. Ooh. Pat was awesome for UW-Eau Claire tornado coverage. That was my very first TV appearance as a college freshman on TV 10, the university's cable TV channel for the dormitories. And yes, on this on this day as a freshman, or not on this day, on September 12th, as a freshman. I'd been a freshman for about 3 weeks. Look at, oh my goodness, look at Greg. Greg has clearly found it. A very, very young Pat Kreitlow with a squeaky voice trying to keep his composure while telling students to take cover because a tornado had been seen in Eau Claire.
I ain't trying to do anything right now, Pat. This is amazing. Let me just tell you, Pat Kreitlow brings that meteorology stuff with a cool sense of calm and casual in that farmer's button down and some jeans.
I'm trying. Well, yeah, I was clearly not dressed to go on air. I'd never been on air. I'm trying to stay calm and informative. And yeah, there. So we.
I'm just gonna.
Yes.
I'm just gonna say for older listeners, if you want an idea of what you look like. As far as the hair goes, just think Arnold Horshack.
No, I would. Well, okay, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I would say a lot.
But mostly it was, who's the late director from Stripes and Harold Ramis.
Harold Ramis. Yeah.
There's a lot of side-by-sides of young me and Harold Ramis. So thanks for calling attention to that YouTube clip, Rob. We'll miss you
and your Tigerton, right now.
Your Tigerton weather updates.
Rob, do you want my dog? That's the only prize I can think of to give us this. Oh my god.
Brittany, how are you?
Oh, so much better now. That's fantastic to hear about.
Here's a real meteorologist here to tell us about what we hope is weather that is not quite that stormy, but the potential is definitely there, Brittany. As comedian Ron White likes to say, it's not that the wind is blowing, it's what the wind is blowing, and you don't want to be the cause of a projectile there. So, all right, Brittany, it's going to be a long one. Yes, Mr. Baca. He's so happy.
I was just saying, we have another weather report to give out.
Wisconsin, another one just over the Menominee area.
More
third area of thunderstorms is located nearby the Twin Cities. There were severe thunderstorms southeast of Minneapolis about the time we were receiving our tornado here in Eau Claire.
Those,
of course, still moving eastward, too. And if anything severe should come out of that,
we're laughing at 18-year-old little Pat Kreitlow.
Brittany, he's pointing at it. He's pointing at a picture of Wisconsin that's just green. It's not even like...
It's not a graphic. We're just...
I need to see this. Send this to me.
Oh, I'm sending it to everyone.
I'm proud of you, Pat. It's hard to forecast the weather. And if you're pointing to the right stuff, then you're on the right track.
That's great advice. Brittany. If you're pointing at something, you're on the right track. Brittany, thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, this was one for the books. Bill Hogsett joins us now as we get set to talk about... How do we put it? It's been an interesting year. It's been an interesting couple of years, and there's never been a more important time to have conversations that are civil and respectful, which does not mean you give up your values, but it does mean we don't have to take everything to, you know, DEFCON 5. Bill Hogsett, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Pat. I'm good. It's nice to be with you. Good to see you.
Well, it's nice to see you as well. You are so active in and around Dunn County on these types of community conversations. You're in an area that does vote heavily Republican and in many spots, you know, especially outside the city of Menominee. And yet I know, living not that far away from there, there are all kinds of folks who they tend to vote one way, but their values are not nearly as extreme as some of the people that they might be voting for. And so many people have had many meetings in coffee shops and party offices and everything saying, where do we go from here? And for you, it's been about starting conversations. Why is that the way that you think is the best approach, given how quickly people, you know, react nowadays to political conversations?
Why do I think that's the best approach? I think quite simply, it's because we have a lot more in common with one another than we might think. And one person might vote one way, another person might vote another way, someone might not vote at all. But when you take the time to ask questions and show curiosity and not jump to judgment about what you hear from somebody, you discover that we all want the same thing. We all want to be able to raise a family. We all want to be able to see the doctor if we're sick. We all want to be safe. And when you can get to that level with people, there's a lot more ground that you can cover. And so that leads us to this thing we call deep canvassing. And deep canvassing is really just kind of a fancy word for something we all already know how to do, which is to listen to another human being, talk about what's important to them. And it's something we all do with our family and friends all the time. What's different about it is applying those same skills to talking to strangers about what's going on in your community, what's going on in your state, what's going on in the nation. And, you know, asking people what's important to you, but also like exploring how do we make change together? How do we actually come together to get what we want for our community? And so really the end result is connection and solidarity with other people in your community.
I think that in a prior age, you know, before the last decade or so, and if you talk to people about canvassing, and I certainly did it as a candidate, it's you're going door to door, you're looking to talk to people, but you're looking to persuade them. You know, in this particular example, hi, my name is Pat Kreitlow. I'm running for such and such. Here's why I think I would do a good job, etc. This is more about knocking on somebody's door, as I understand it, and saying, I want to listen to you first.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm simplifying it a bit too much, but once somebody is properly trained to do that kind of a listening campaign, what are they really doing at people's doors in a deep canvas?
They're asking a lot of questions. They're really asking questions that invite the person at the door to open up and to share. And so a lot of times in these conversations, which are, you know, 10, 15, sometimes 20 minutes long, you've got a canvasser who's really probing with somebody and taking interest and showing curiosity. And what we notice is that once the person who, after they open their door, realize that you're friendly, that you're interested, that you're curious, and that you're going to actually listen to them, most people really open up. And most people are actually really hungry to be heard and to share. So when I first started doing this, I actually was kind of terrified the first time I went to a door. Like, how is this going to go? And quickly realized that most people are really craving human connection. The other thing that our canvassers are doing, Pat, and this is part of what we go through in our training, is that they're sharing a story of their own. So in Dunn County this summer, we're going to be talking to people about housing. So our canvassers are going to share a story about a time when they or someone that they know struggled with housing, in some maybe a big way and some maybe a little way. But what we find is that when the canvasser shares a story that's personal and important to them, it really allows the person who's at the door to do the same and to open up, and the person realizes, okay, this could be a really real, authentic conversation. So listening and storytelling are really at the core of the skills that someone needs to do this. Again, which these are skills everybody already has. They just kind of have to summon up the courage to be able to do it with a stranger in their community.
The Grassroots Organizing Western Wisconsin website is gro-ww.org. gro-ww.org. And on that page is a link down near the bottom. There's several things that are going on with the group. And the one you're looking for is a deep canvassing training, changing the conversation about housing in Dunn County, and register there. You still have room for folks, Bill, before I
Add
to myself? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And even if people aren't like specifically interested in housing in Dunn County, they just want to learn these skills. We think these are important skills that are transferable to so many parts of this kind of work. They're welcome to join.
Yeah, I noticed as some of them are scrolling through, there's a final five voting conversation about the different types of ways that we might change the way that we vote for elected officials in the future. Again, all of them look to be as respectful as we all would want our conversations to be. Again, gro-ww.org. Bill Hogsett, thank you so much for teaching us more about this.
Sounds great. Thanks for having us on, Pat.
Oh, thank you, Bill, for the time. I appreciate it very much. Still to come, reaction to this week's declaration by the U.S. Supreme Court about presidential immunity and a new conversation with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, all coming up here up north.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with a Work Money Minute about Buy Now, Pay Later services. You might know some of these names: Klarna, Affirm, Afterpay. These are where when you're shopping online, instead of buying something all at once, you can just pay 25% of the cost and then pay the rest off in installments. Well, turns out more and more folks are missing repayments. A recent Credit Karma survey found that 40% of buy now, pay later customers have missed their repayments. And that means fees, high interest payments, I mean like 36% interest, which turns these services from, oh, maybe useful, to, whoa, this is costing me way more than I expected. Buy now, pay later services don't help your credit score, but they can hurt it. Not worth the risk. Those companies really mean that pay later part. Okay, folks, that was your Work Money Minute. For more money tips, head on over to workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. No
more kings. We're going to elect a president.
No more kings.
He's going to do what the people want.
No more kings.
We're going to run things our way.
No more kings.
Nobody's going to tell us what to do.
Rocking and a rolling, swishing and a splashing over the horizon. What can it be? Looks like it's going to be a free country.
Oh, those were the days when Schoolhouse Rock would tell us about not having kings anymore, and that no man is above the law in America. And then came Watergate, where a Republican president had the honor of resigning, had the dignity to resign once it was discovered the things that he had done in office. But there are others at the time that saw that as some kind of a problem, and they wanted to make sure that you couldn't see Watergate again, because presidents should be able to do things that they want to do. As Richard Nixon said once upon a time, you know, when the president does it, it's not a crime. And we all laughed about that at the time, but we're not laughing now. Now that the Supreme Court has said that former presidents have broad immunity from prosecution, which is going to extend the delay in the criminal case against an American president attempting a coup, attempting to overthrow the results of an election, of attempting to use the Justice Department to pressure other government officials to cheat in an election. Now, some will say that there's still more work to be done on this, that this doesn't end the legal matter for Donald Trump, that there's still going to be hearings that are going to look at whether the things that Trump is accused of doing are official acts of the presidency, which the Supreme Court now says have an assumption of immunity to them, or if somehow they are unofficial acts. But by doing what the court did yesterday, by saying, well, you've got to err on the side of any official acts that a president does, he's going to have legal immunity from them, is going to make it tough, if not impossible, to ever hold a president accountable for illegal acts if they can somehow claim that this was all part of an official act. Some of the reaction includes Bradford Pearson from Philly Magazine saying, the Supreme Court announcing that presidents are basically now kings during July 4th week is quite a choice. From Asha Rangappa, former FBI special agent, the court has handed Trump, if he wins this November, carte blanche to be dictator on day one, the ability to use every lever of official power at his disposal for his personal ends without any recourse. This election is now a clear-cut decision between democracy and autocracy. From journalist Stephanie Mensimer. So just to recap, this Supreme Court this term has said the president is king, the administrative state is dead, and bribing public officials is okay. These justices, she writes, have created a powder keg where people cannot solve their problems through the government or hold anyone in charge accountable anymore. From journalist and author James Fallows, this feels a lot like December 12th, 2000, the day the ruling came down in Bush v. Gore, and a reminder, he says, John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett were all on George W. Bush's Florida recount team back in 2000, and they are Supreme Court justices now. So where do we go from here? We've got science journalist Katie Spaulding writing, thinking about how it would be reported if the ex-president of a non-Western country was ruled immune from prosecution by a panel of justices he himself appointed. From Rick Wilson at the Lincoln Project, I'd like to thank the Supreme Court for granting Joe Biden godlike official powers. I think his first step should be to declare all Trump golf courses as protected federal wildlife preserves and seize them all by eminent domain. It's an official act, so it's cool, right? Then you've got former White House journalist Sam Youngman who writes, so Biden is told by the Supreme Court he can't forgive student loans, but he can order a drone strike on loan collectors? And then finally, Henry Rosenberg in Georgia, or Henry Rosenberg who writes that in Georgia, Trump did not say to Raffensperger, the Secretary of State there, are you sure I don't have enough votes to win? He said, what I need you to do is find me 11,780 votes. That, he writes, is not part of his official duties. It is asking a public official to commit fraud for him. And that may very well be the case. But it's that much tougher now for any special prosecutor, for anybody to bring a legal charge against a former president for that. It's where we were supposed to have a check and balance that our founding fathers set up in the United States Senate, the power to impeach and remove from office. And when the founding fathers set that up, we did not have a two-party system the way that we have today. You had George Washington warning against the formation of political parties, that it was better to basically have, you know, consortiums as need be, as issues came up. But once you have a strict party system, and it grows to the point, and the money in it grows to the point where you've got to protect your team at all costs, even if your guy is a goofball, even if your guy is a criminal, but you have to protect your team at all costs, it's how you got so many gutless wonders in the United States Senate that when faced with clear and convincing evidence of a crime, not once, but twice, these same senators said, nah, we got to protect our guy. Lacking that ability to impeach because of an impartial Senate preserving its separation of powers is what's giving us a presidency that is on the doorstep of unaccountable monarchy. And that does sound extreme, and that does sound alarmist. But we have seen what Donald Trump has done and what he is willing to do. We have seen what his supporters have talked about doing. And if these things are done under the guise of official acts, well then, if Donald Trump not just takes national security secrets and puts them in cardboard boxes at a bathroom in Mar-a-Lago, but actually shares them with American adversaries, but that's an official act, you're not going to find a prosecutor willing to take that case up because, based on yesterday's ruling, the U.S. Department of Justice can be tinkered with by a sitting president all they want. And you won't have a U.S. Senate holding that kind of activity to account either. So it's not hyperbolic. It is fraught with peril, the possibilities of what somebody like a Donald Trump could do in a second term. You know, we've made this jump from what Richard Nixon did and then being held accountable to it to where we are today. And because the Supreme Court isn't going to do anything about it, and because the current U.S. Senate isn't going to do anything about it, like it or not, it's all back on the voters who have to make a decision this November. And should make it based on these very clear-eyed views of the facts rather than a performance at a debate or political commercials or anything else of that matter. When we come back, Bryce Luchterhand is going to join us, and we'll talk about helping some of the refugees from the war in Ukraine. That's next. You're up north.
Even
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
International guests finding their way to Wisconsin this week for the National Brown Swiss Convention. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a finally Friday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. They're all headed towards Brown County. The National Brown Swiss Show started before the 4th of July, celebrated yesterday, and will continue with show activities right on through Saturday evening. Josh Hushin is the assistant chair of the National Brown Swiss Convention. He's also past president of the Wisconsin Brown Swiss Association. He says it's just natural for the Brown Swiss to come to Wisconsin.
Wisconsin has more brown Swiss than any other state. And if you're asking me, I'm a little biased. I think we have the best brown Swiss in the country as well. So the way that we'll celebrate that is a couple things. The first is that we're going to give our youth a chance to show their animals to really a global audience, because we have attendees coming from Switzerland, from Italy, and from South America. So they'll have a chance to show off the hard work that they're doing with their cattle to a global audience and get feedback and compete with their peers to see where they're at. The second thing that we'll do then is to visit some local farms. So we've got three farms that we'll take tours to.
There you go. Bet you didn't realize Wisconsin had so many brown Swiss. That's Josh Hushin, assistant chair of the National Brown Swiss Convention. He stresses that it is open to the public and they welcome anybody to come on by. The animals are at the Brown County Fairgrounds in Green Bay. Their convention happening downtown Green Bay at the KI Center.
Introducing Certain Herbicide, the latest corn innovation from BASF. It brings powerful PPO residual chemistry into a pre-through early post application thanks to novel solid encapsulation technology. Apply from pre-plant to V3 and get up to 8 weeks of residual control or suppression of 79 broadleaf and grass weed species. Don't chase weeds all through the season. Attack them before they emerge with Certain Herbicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Water hemp, Palmer amaranth, and giant ragweed. Left undisturbed, they will become the most dangerous foes to corn plants. But in the early season, these weeds are at their weakest. Now is the time. A predator lurks. Certain herbicide attacks, unleashing full residual power before weeds have a chance to emerge. Pre or early post application, they are hopeless against such effective chemistry. Certain herbicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
On Wednesday, barrel cheese was up 2.25 at 190 and a quarter. 40-pound block cheese was unchanged at 190. Double A butter down a quarter, still at 313 and a half per pound. One crop that's already being realized in Wisconsin, our cherry crop. Jim Sequest from Sequest Orchards in Door County says it's a big crop this year. He said normally they've got room for about 15 million pounds of Wisconsin cherries, and he said right now they're just about at capacity. They started pick your own as of this week. They'll bring in mechanical harvesters to get the rest starting July 11th. I'm Pam Yonke.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A shift in government, not here, overseas.
To the country, I would like to say first and foremost, I am sorry. I have given this job my all, but you have sent a clear signal that the government of the United Kingdom must change.
Outgoing British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, after his Conservative Party lost badly in yesterday's election. They had been in power for 14 years. The Labour Party's Keir Starmer will become the country's new prime minister. President Biden beginning a critical stretch in his effort to keep his re-election campaign going. He will meet with voters in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania today and will sit down for a one-on-one interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos later. Hurricane Beryl, a Category 2 storm, as it batters the Mexican resort towns of Cancun and Tulum on the Yucatan Peninsula, Tulum especially in the crosshairs. Labor Department's June employment report out this morning expected to show the market beginning to cool just slightly. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A judge in Madison is striking down parts of Act 10, the state law that took away collective bargaining rights for most public workers. Dane County Judge Jacob Frost says parts of the law violate the constitutional right to equal protection because law enforcement was exempted. It's not clear exactly how Wednesday's ruling will be applied. There's more law enforcement out on the water this holiday weekend, making sure people are boating sober. Savannah Tomei Olson has more on Operation Dry Water.
Please be careful on the water this weekend. Since the project began in 2009, law enforcement has gotten more than 6,000 drunk boaters off the water. The DNR says wear life vests and have a designated driver. Alcohol is a leading factor in boating deaths. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
That's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The 4th of July typically means a big weekend at the summer box office. This year should not disappoint. Opening this weekend is Disney Pixar's Despicable Me 4, which is expected to be the film that finally knocks off Inside Out 2 from the top spot. The most recent installment is pulling a not-quite-fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but the franchise has enough street cred with audiences to put the butts in the seats. Despicable Me 4 stars Steve Carell, Kristen Wiig, and Miranda Cosgrove. Another highly anticipated opening is Maxine, a film about a young, aspiring actress in 1980s Hollywood that gets drawn into the world of adult films, all while a serial killer haunts the LA streets. If you want to watch a moving picture from the comfort of your own home, Eddie Murphy stars in Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., which is now available to stream on Netflix. The film is receiving a fresh rating from Rotten Tomatoes and has some of the same old cast members, including Judge Reinhold and John Ashton, and has added a fresh face in Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Have fun at the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible through early to mid-afternoon today. It'll be mostly cloudy through midday and then gradually clearing here this afternoon. High today, 72. Tonight, clear, 55. Tomorrow, sun in the morning, scattered thunderstorms in the afternoon with a high of 78. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? WIS Caregiver Careers can get you started as a certified direct care professional. You'll learn the skills you need to make life better for older adults or people with a disability. All training is free and online, plus earn $500 in bonuses. Start your new career. Sign up today at WISCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
The Todd Alba Show.
Brady joining us live via phone.
I tell the guys before every game, and honestly try to do it before every practice, challenge is going to come. This team is not just going to show up and allow us to walk all over them and win. Really what matters is how are we going to respond to that? And if you can adapt and use it as a learning opportunity, it's going to set you up to go accomplish darn near anything you want to.
I think there are a lot of people that need to hear that message today.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jane is off, but I, Greg Bach, am hosting in her stead. We welcome Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, as well as Civic Media's very own Luke Mathers. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Send lawyers, guns, and money.
And it is my pleasure to welcome back to the program former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, also the host of Amicus every weekend, all about the latest legal issues. And there have been a lot of latest legal issues. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Pat, always a pleasure to be with you, even at a time when our country is wrestling, is it not, with some major things coming out of the Supreme Court, the least of which is this notion that they just announced this past week. The presidents do, in fact, have some immunity for crimes committed in office.
It's so stunning. And I don't know that it's oversimplification to say that this is Nixon's revenge. You know, when Nixon said, well, if the president does it, it's not a crime.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of that, I often thought, too, as I'm looking through some of this opinion, which we will talk about, that there's also a portion of this in which the Supreme Court says that when it comes to the president reaching out to the Department of Justice and telling the Attorney General and others to engage in criminal conduct, as to that set of things in Donald Trump's indictment, there is absolute immunity, absolute immunity. And it prompts me to think, gosh, Richard Nixon is calling. He wants his presidency back, right?
Yes.
He wants his presidency. But that's precisely the reason why Richard Nixon he resigned.
Yeah.
But basically thrown out of the White House because he was engaging in corruption with the Department of Justice and again, attempting to organize not only a conspiracy, but accomplish crimes from the White House with the Department of Justice. Our Supreme Court this past week said that presidents have immunity, absolute immunity for that issue. And again, others a little bit less clear, but on that point, reversing again what we've understood to be, frankly, almost half a century of understanding this country about right. What our president cannot do with the Justice Department.
No, the Justice Department was supposed to be very much off limits, and now the conservative justices gave them an absolute green light for this, which is just stunning, and frankly, does not pass what I would call the other shoe test, that if this were President Hillary Clinton, there is no way in hell that those same justices would find that same degree of immunity. I can say that with 100% certainty.
Right. Absolutely. Hillary Clinton, I believe the same could be said about my boss, Barack Obama, and others, obviously, in history, that would have prompted a very different result here. And once again, underscoring, Pat, as you and I have chatted, the politicization of this Supreme Court, that it shouldn't make a difference, right? Whatever they decide, and yet it would. This case, the other comment that I think your good thought there underscores is, and I've been wrestling with this, hyperbole, right? We tend to say this is the most significant thing that's happened. We talk about the most important elections in our time. This is awesome. This is catastrophic, all those kinds of things. And I've come to the conclusion, Pat, my friend, and for your listeners as well, this is hair on fire. This is absolutely hair on fire situation. It is of the top order. It is rescinding major portions, if not all, of the Constitution. And as one of our justices on the dissenting side said, they fear for the Republic, and it may well be the end, beginning of the end of what we know as the United States of America. That is not hyperbole, although I've wrestled with this. I've read it several times. We've got a situation here where to speak in those terms is not hyperbolic. The American public, including your listeners, should know how serious this is as we are in this week of celebrating our nation's 248th anniversary.
It's just a reminder again, and we can't say it enough, to guard against complacency, to say, oh, they just say those things, but you know, it won't happen, whatever extreme action is. But the court has made it so much easier now for some kind of an extreme action to take place. Here's something I found was very interesting, or awkward, shall we say. The justices in repealing Roe v. Wade said, we don't see any explicit right to privacy. We don't see any explicit right to abortion care. But there's also no explicit right to presidential immunity. So apparently they just made that up.
Right. I think that's true. That's certainly true of a lot of the criticism of this opinion. And there is nothing in the Constitution, many concepts and phrases that are not in the Constitution. This is one of them. There is no such thing as immunity. And you can make the strong argument, Pat, as you have in other circumstances, and I have too, that just the opposite is true, that the entire corpus of the Constitution is a check and balance between the three branches of government, with the exception maybe of the pardon power, which also looms large in this particular issue, this particular situation. The whole notion of our republic is that there is not immunity, and there are situations where indeed one branch checks the other and makes certain that there are restraints on behavior by an executive. And the Supreme Court has said, again here, using this very peculiar made-up phrase now, presumptive immunity. Presumptive immunity. And that's the scary portion of this also, that sending this back now to the district court judge, there is a presumption that not only in the Department of Justice area, but four other areas identified in the indictment, that there is a presumption that the immunity applies, and the government, Jack Smith, has to prove otherwise in front of Tanya Chutkan. All of that completely made up out of whole cloth, out of the air, and now it's the law of the land.
It just so much for there. Somewhere out there are what you would call authentic originalists going, No, you guys can stop calling yourself originalists with something like this. Here's a question about recusal, especially based on the activity of their spouses. Should Justices Alito and Thomas have recused themselves from this case?
Yes, absolutely. Not only because of what we have seen very recently with Justice Alito and Thomas, both of them, connections and statements in the public domain by their spouses, by their partners. And again, is there benefit that will come to their spouses? Maybe direct, maybe indirect from this. Of course there should be, or there will be. And for that reason, you're looking perhaps not even so much at the actual conflict. It is the appearance, right, Pat, of impropriety. It's this notion that somehow my decision is being prompted by what my wife, my spouse, is telling me, what she is advocating for. With respect to Ginny Thomas, a strong advocacy about the 2020 election, all of that. We've got recently Justice Alito's wife, who's plainly making statements through her flags supporting that same notion that somehow the 2020 election was stolen. All of that suggests that they should not be on this case. They have basically denied any sort of not only appearance of impropriety, but any inappropriate animus or motive here. They should be off this case. They should not be deciding it. Absolutely.
And again, the shoe on the other foot thing, if you just envisioned for a moment what it would have looked like if one of the liberal justices' spouses had been engaged in this, I mean, it would be nonstop coverage on the right-wing media. So I've got to ask then, to close this part of the discussion out, in terms of where do we go from here, specifically Jack Smith's case against Donald Trump, obviously has to be reviewed. But what's this I hear about that the next step could be what's called evidentiary hearings? And while there may not be a trial before the election, there may be these hearings that say, you know what, this thing is not an official act and this is going to go forward. There may not be a trial, but at least they'll hear a judge look at the evidence and say, no, this is not official and you will be tried for this. Is that right, still a possibility?
That is plainly not only a possibility, but you've got it just right, Pat. That's really what the Supreme Court has directed here. As said, with respect to the Department of Justice, that's off the table, which is stunning. But there are these four other areas in the indictment having to do with the former presidents and maybe future presidents' engagement with Mike Pence at the time. The fake electors is a part of this, other people involved, and then also commentary, other things, communications said on January 6th. In all of those, the Supreme Court has said presumptive immunity, but it might be a difficult question. So we're not resolving that. We're sending that back to you, Judge Chutkan, and you figure this out, presumably in the course of some pretrial hearings, and then you'll go to the trial. Now, again, my own view is that Judge Chutkan has got to be the most unhappy federal district court judge in the nation right now, because this is an absolute mess. They've given her no direction about what is official, what is unofficial, and she somehow has to parse through evidence that will be presented at a trial, at a later proceeding, and figure out what does and does not come in. All of it is very strange. I'll add one more thing to that, and that is they've also said along the way that there are certain restrictions even on this trial going forward and even these hearings. One of them is, Jack Smith, you can't focus upon motive. You can't be talking about the reasons why, the motivation for this, the intent, the purpose, which is true of every single criminal trial in America, state or federal. Right. They've taken that off the table. They've also said some things about the incapacity of the prosecutor to present evidence of official conduct as opposed to unofficial conduct to make that comparison. That you can't do either, which again really ties not only the prosecutor, but also makes Judge Chutkan's role in these hearings that she's going to be having virtually impossible even to arrange, to structure in some cognizable way that makes sense. It is a mess in addition to being catastrophic for our nation.
Well, let's be clear. It is a monarchist view. How dare you question the motive of the sovereign? You know, that there are no impure motives there. And again, sadly, there's no other Supreme Court to go to above them to say, what part of that basic law school class did you skip? But right, we must skip on as well as we continue to sum up this recently completed term with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. before we get to the regulatory state, since we were talking just a moment ago about Justices Alito and Thomas, let's talk briefly about a case with no irony whatsoever, it seems, where they've made it easier for officials at the state and local level to receive gratuities, shall we say. They're not bribes. They're gratuities. Again, now that we've had a little bit of time since that case was resolved, is that overblown, or is that a real concern that we're going to see at that level of government officials going forward?
Right. It is an interpretation now, again, by the majority. We've got a very vigorously dissenting group of dissenters, once again, right down ideological lines here. This case happens to come out of our own circuit here, the Seventh Circuit. It's a case out of Indiana. We've got a mayor who, again, depending upon how you describe this, took a $13,000 check for some trash trucks and a contract there in his city. And in the end, the majority of the Supreme Court says, you know what? That's an after-the-fact gratuity. That's something that happened after the fact. It is not covered by this particular statute. Let's look at the language. And for that reason, Mr. Snyder's conviction has to be overturned.
I didn't go to law school. I didn't go to law school. But there are some Latin phrases that all of us know. One of them is a quid pro quo, which is exactly an after-the-fact type of favor. Again, this sounds like basic law school to a guy who didn't go to law school. Are you as equally gobsmacked by something like this?
I am. And again, about the 30 years of my time in the U.S. Attorney's Office, routinely the Department of Justice will advocate for various positions about how you interpret laws. Supreme Court tells us those things. Here, yes, gobsmacked is the right way to describe this. The dissent, of course, saying, not just scratching their heads, but saying you must be joking on this. And here's the other point about this, which is also warrants some attention. This is the Snyder case, once again. That's how it's captioned. Getting back to your early very good comments, Pat, about concerns on the court, one may well look at this and say this one's coming a little bit too close to home. And so we're going to get rid of a conviction of a fellow who it was simply gratuities, things after the fact, nothing to see here. Well, we may have at least two members of the Supreme Court who may be in the same circumstance. They don't want to draw too close a comparison between them and this, or maybe they do and say, want to say, you know what, gratuities, those gifts on the side, those things should not be a concern for the American public. People are looking at Snyder and saying, is this also a product of some very personal motivation?
It certainly seems that way. We're so going to look back at this time, even on the things they punted on. They punted on the abortion pill and abortion care. They punted on social media. But even sending that signal is something that's going to make this session one for the history books. Jim Santel, thank you for telling us all about it. Enjoy your holiday weekend.
Pat, you also, always a pleasure to be with you. And we will do just that to you and your listeners. Also, best wishes in America of 2024.
We're going to need it. Coming up next, former Alice in Dairyland Julia Nunez, and in our next hour, Joe Zepecki and Melissa Baldoff together. You're up north here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for matinee on air.
It's 2024 and Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth. We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Water World, is ready for another season. Our schools have expanded and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to hear this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome. Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Former Allison Dairyland Julia Nunes from Chippewa Falls, now at the Wisconsin Farmers Union, is our guest this week as well. Julia, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Yeah, now it's been 4 years since you first started serving as Allison Dairyland. Actually served for a little extended time because of the pandemic that was going on at the time. So your Alice reign was unusual, you know, by many standards, but you've definitely stayed in the business of promoting Wisconsin farmers and agriculture and dairy and more. What are you doing with Wisconsin Farmers Union now?
Yeah. So, wow, I can't believe you said 4 years ago. That just really dated me.
Yeah, but, you're so old, Julia, I tell you.
Well, it seems like just yesterday, but also 4 years ago. So I'm now a communication specialist with Wisconsin Farmers Union. I came on staff in October of last year, so I've been on staff for a little bit now, and I'm just here to help share the stories of our Wisconsin farmers, so that especially those small and medium-sized farms. I want everyone to know where their food is coming from, and I really enjoy doing that with Wisconsin Farmers Union and meeting some of the farmers across the state. And now it's June Dairy Month, and I grew up on a dairy farm, so this is kind of a little extra special for me to promote those farms and the dairy products that they produce. And yeah, so I'm really excited to be doing that with Wisconsin Farmers Union now.
So yeah, this is now Julie becomes the second most famous dairy farmer's daughter to come out of Tilden after Judy Clark, my old co-anchor at Channel 13. But to have another Tildenite, I think, is a real honor to have you talking about appreciation for Wisconsin farming, and because it's more diverse than ever. You've got families like Hans's, you've got things that qualify as corporate or mega farms. It's just not nearly as homogenous as it used to be, but all of them have a role to play in Wisconsin agriculture.
That's right. Here in Wisconsin, we have more than 5,000 dairy farms, ranging from small to large, and they are all working hard to care for their animals and produce this high quality milk, which is then turned into so many different of my favorite products: butter, cheese, ice cream. The list goes on and on. I could go forever on my favorite dairy products.
That's what qualifies you as an Alice, is that you could do that. Again, folks hear about it probably every year, but not everybody is familiar with it. Can you give us a little historical background to Alice in Dairyland?
Oh, wow, you're really putting me on the spot. Yes, so the Allison Dairyland program started in 1948 as a way to celebrate 100 years of Wisconsin. It was position first chosen at the Centennial Exposition, and Alice was the host of the event. And it started as just a way to kind of spread the good news of Wisconsin's dairy industry across not only Wisconsin, but the entire country. Over the years, the position has really morphed and changed. Today, Alice is an ambassador for agriculture, for all agriculture in Wisconsin, the dairy industry, ginseng, beef, anything and everything Wisconsin agriculture. Alice in Dairyland works to promote through classroom visits, writing articles, TV, radio interviews, speeches, a little bit of everything. And it's a full-time job through the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And yes, I served as Alice from July of 2020 until the beginning of July 2022. So yes, 2 years as Alice because of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, Hans, how do you think she did answering that? I think she did all right, given that you would have made an excellent Alice, Hans. You are such an ambassador for Wisconsin farming.
Clearly, yeah. But I was overlooked, and Julia got the pick, and I think they made the right call.
But Hans, you know, talk for a minute about basically the personification of Wisconsin farm marketing, because I haven't been in all these other states, so I may be off the mark, but I think that creating the Alice in Dairyland position all those years ago helped kind of put a family farm face on Wisconsin agriculture, which was already a leader as it was, but definitely made it more approachable to folks around the country than we might have a different stereotype of farmers who are, you know, distant and, you know, not plugged into the community. Whereas Alice, that's as community minded as a role gets for agriculture.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And at the risk of overstating it, I think, you know, it's like the Queen of England, right? It's the personification, like you said. But it helps to have someone like Julia that really can knock it out of the park and do that role well and be that ambassador for ag. And it's more important now than ever, not only to...
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Earl Ingram.
Tune in to the show Friday for my regular conversation with my good friend Sandy Williams. We'll talk about the 4th of July, my interview with President, and a whole lot more.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.